We're busy with a series called Life's Healing Choices, and what we've been looking at over the last couple of weeks is to look at some key choices that we need to make, that when we make these choices, it will bring healing to our lives, it will bring healing to our hurts, our hang-ups, and our habits that cause havoc in our lives, because all of us have some or the other hurt where someone hurt you in the past, or we have some or the other hang-up. With all kinds of issues, and we have some very destructive habits. And in this series, we're taking a look at how do I deal with them? What are some choices that I need to make that will, over time, as I consistently stick to these choices, bring healing to those and bring healing to my spiritual life and my relationship with God, and ultimately bring healing to my emotional life, my mental life, and my physical life. Now, today, if you can remember a couple of things, and this should be very helpful to you. Let me just see if I can get it all. If you can remember a hammer, okay, if you can remember these items, then this can change your life, so look carefully. If you can remember a hammer, a sponge, if you can remember, let me just flip these over, death. Let's be more positive here. Life. And if you can remember handcuffs. And a mystery item. Okay, so if you can remember those four things, we'll look at the fifth one just now. If you can remember life and death. If you can remember a hammer. A sponge. What was the fourth one? Handcuffs and the mystery item. Now, the mystery item, because it's so mysterious, I'm going to give an opportunity for someone to guess what it is. But anyone involved in helping me to find this are obviously not allowed to comment because it was semi-hard to find. Now, I'll give you tips as to what it is. I'll give you three tips, and then you can take a shot at it, and you can guess, and if you get it right, you get... I think it's 400 grams or something. 400 grams of quality street chocolates. Okay, so clue number one of the mystery item. Everyone has one. Okay, that's clue number one. Everyone has one. Clue number two. Not everyone uses it. Everyone has one, not everyone uses it. Clue number three, is sometimes we lose it. So, hold on a second. So, one is everyone has one. Number two, all of us, not all of us use it. And number three, sometimes we lose it. Anyone want to take a, raise your hand here, and let's, Auntie Mavis. Sorry? Bible. Not the Bible. Mike Smith? Temper. No, not temper. Betty? Brains. Betty, why don't you come up and get your box of quality? Spread the chocolate wealth, sister. Spread the chocolate wealth. Okay. All of us have one. This is a brain. It is pretty disgusting. But all of us have one. We don't always use it, and sometimes we lose our mind. Now, the brain, let me tell you a couple of interesting facts about the brain. You want to see the other side. Part of it broke off. Unfortunately. That's the other side. I don't really know how it all works. But there it is. Let me put this side. Actually, looks better. Let me put this side back. Now, the dude that this belonged to, his name is... I'm going to tell you. He's in the audience. Okay, as a baby, when you get born, the average brain weighs about 400 grams, just educating you. And then as an adult, plus minus 1.3 to 1.4 kilograms. Apparently, Albert Einstein had a less weighty brain than the average human. He's weighed 1.2. Basically, the brain feels like a, you can try it afterwards, but it feels like a mushy avo, you know, really ripe avo. It's mushy and you touch it and it's sort of some mushy-ish. That's what it feels like. If you flip it open, the cerebral cortex would spread out about the size of a little lampstand table. The human brain, I don't know how they measure this, but produces about 70,000 thoughts a day. Okay, it's capable of doing that, producing 70,000 thoughts a day. It is made up, out of 77% of it is made up out of water. There are about 100 billion neurons in your brain. Okay, that's the same amount as stars that we have in our galaxy. Okay, 100 million of those guys. Basically, in the early stages of pregnancy, the fetus develops about 250,000 neurons per minute. Okay, so it's quickly developing in the early stages, and then we obviously know as we get older, that certainly stops. As a matter of fact, when you're above 30, a lot of things make more sense to me now. When you're above 30, you lose every year 0.25% of the mass of your brain. Because that might explain a number of things to all of us. Then the slowest speed at which information travels between neurons is 416 kilometers per hour. Okay, so information flows through the brain. If you go without blood flow to your brain in 10 seconds, you'll faint. If you go for about 6 minutes without oxygen to the brain, you are very quickly busy dying. Okay. Although the brain only makes up 2% of your body weight, it uses 20% of the body's energy. And actually, your brain can power, again, I don't know how they measure this, but your brain can power a 25-watt light bulb. Okay, pretty cool. There are more electrical impulses are generated in one day by a single human brain than by all the telephones in the world. Okay, this is a fascinating piece of equipment. As a man thinketh within his heart, so he is. Now, how does all of this fit into what we are discussing? Shakespeare said that there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Hearing choice number four for us, friends, is that we need to be very intentional about what we store up and allow in our minds. Because our thought life plays a huge role in who we are and in what we do. Take a look with me in Romans chapter 8 and we'll see why. Romans chapter 8, we'll read from verse 5. Are we going to read it twice just to get it? Those who live according to the sinful nature have their minds set on what that nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of the sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. Those, verse 5, who live according to the sinful nature have their minds set on what that nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds, their mushy avo, on what the Spirit desires. The mind of the sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind controlled by the sinful nature is death. If we allow our minds to be controlled by our sinful nature, it brings death to our hopes, to our dreams, to our relationships, to our self-worth. And ultimately, if we allow our minds to be controlled by the sinful nature, it brings death to our eternity. But on the other side, the passage says that if we allow our minds to be controlled by the Spirit, what it brings about is life and peace. It means that it brings life and peace to our hopes. It brings life and peace to our dreams. It brings life and peace to our relationships. It brings life and peace to our self-worth. And ultimately, in the long run, if we allow our minds, our thought life, to be controlled by God's Spirit, it brings life and peace to our eternity. In many ways, you can say that our spiritual life, our emotional life, our mental life, and our physical life is controlled in more than one way by our thoughts. And getting the right thoughts and keeping the right thoughts in your mind, it can bring health to every and each of those areas of your life. But it's all dependent on what do you feed the mushy avo? What are the kind of thoughts that you allow to ponder upon, yourself to ponder upon, to think upon? What is it that you allow in your mind? See, Satan knows the effect of our thought life. He knows the major effect that it has on each one of us and in every part of our beings. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, it says, "Be self-controlled and alert. For your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour." It says, be self-controlled. Be self-controlled and alert, for your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. He is looking for someone who is not self-controlled and alert as to their thought life, as to what it is that they allow their minds to dwell on, as to what it is that goes into the avo. Someone who is not paying attention to their thought life. Satan is looking for that someone, prowling around like a roaring lion, looking because he knows that he can devour them. It's fascinating, over the last couple of years or decade or so, how much attention people have started paying to what it is that we eat. We want to make sure, is it organic? How many calories is in it? What is the energy level? How much sugar is in it? What is the fat percentage? And you constantly see people walking around in shops, and what do? They pick up the jar and they look on the other side to say, well, what is in this thing? Because I know it affects. I know that that sugar or that fat is going to sit somewhere. And for different people, it sits at different places. Some of it sits here. I know for some it sits here, for others it sits here, and others it sits there. But mine is sort of in hiding, likely to most, but the mirror sits there. And so we look at what is it that we eat, and we pay so much attention, and people are constantly asking, but is it low GI? That's the talk of the day. Is it low GI bread? Is it this? Is it that? We pay so much attention because we know what goes into the body is not necessarily going to exit the body. It is going to hang with me for a long time, and it's going to influence my health. But what about our thought life? Do we pay the same amount of attention to the thoughts that we allow into our minds, where we say, listen, if I take that thought into my mind, it is going to sit somewhere. It's not just going to disappear. Whatever it is that I allow in my mind is somehow going to have an effect in everything that I do. And who I am, the way that I think, the way that I feel, it will affect me physically, it will affect my family, it will affect my kids, it will affect my neighbors and my colleagues. Whatever it is that I get into my mind. And we've got to be careful with this. We have to be self-controlled and alert, because our enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. He is feeding us lies every single day of our lives. In John chapter 8, Jesus says that the devil is the father of lies. When he speaks or when he lies, he speaks his native language. And he's brilliant with this. He doesn't dump his lies on us in one shot. He does it bit by bit. Bit by bit, he'll bombard your mind with little nagging thoughts, little suspicions about God, about people around you, fears, doubts, criticisms, conceit. But it's bit by bit. It is not one lump sum. It is little. You can barely notice it, barely feel it, barely realize that it affects you. He'll say little things like, don't worry about what you do. God won't judge you. But he won't even say it that loud. It would almost be like a whisper. Don't worry about it. God won't judge you. He's like a big grandfather. He's like Father Christmas. I ho, to heaven we all will go. You don't have to change. You don't have to judge. Be judged. He will make you say, oh, just compare yourself to him or to her. Even a person sitting next to you, or even your spouse, you're a lot better off than them. Your colleagues, your family members, I mean, you're in good shape. Good shape, I tell you. Good shape. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. Little by little. Little by little, he says those things to deceive you. Satan whispers lies of accusation, doesn't he? To others, he says, God doesn't love you. He doesn't care. He's not happy with you, honestly. You'll never be able to satisfy him, never. Why even try? You're never going to get there. You will never be able to satisfy God. You will never be able to measure up. God will never forgive you. He'll never forgive you for what you've just done. He'll never forgive you for your past. He'll never forgive you for the kind of things that you've thought. He'll never forgive you. Just let it go. Let it be. Don't worry about a relationship with them. Don't be so intense about it. It's going to be okay. Every day he's going after your avo. Every single day. He wants it. He'll feed you about lies, with lies about yourself. And I think women are especially prone to this. He'll say to you, you're a loser. You're a failure. You're a good for nothing. No wonder people don't want to be around you. Why would they want to be around someone like yourself? Why would they want to be around you? You're not pretty enough. I don't think men battles much with that one. But I know what woman it is, you know, it's look at your nose. I mean, let's be honest, sisters, it happens. Look at your chins. If I just had that one's chin, why do people get so many surgeries and what have you to get themselves in better looking shape? So we compare, you're not pretty enough. Your thigh is like a pregnant elephant. Now, I see some are afraid to even laugh at that. This is true, friends. I've spoken to some sisters recently, and boy, it's your mind goes into a wild spin as you listen to Satan's lies day after day bombards you about your struggles. Your problems are unique. No one understands you. No one understands what it is that you're going through. No one knows you. No one knows what it feels like to be you. No one knows what it feels like to have this temptation or this struggle or to work through these issues. It's unique to you. You cannot change it. You'll never be able to overcome your hurts, your hang-ups, and your habits. You're different. And you're destined to fail. Just give up. Don't even try. He'll go after you when you're trying to reach out to others and trying to, introduce them to God, invite them out of church. He'll say, they won't be interested. You've not even spoken to them. They won't be interested. They won't. Don't walk past them. Walk past them. Just walk past. You know what? Even if they were to be interested, you don't know how to help them. What kind of person are you? I mean, if they know a fraction of who you are, that won't help. They won't want to be helped by you. You can't help them. It's every area. It's relationships. Don't trust your parents. For the teenagers, don't trust them. They don't have your best interest at heart. Really, they don't. Don't trust your boss. Don't trust those who are trying to help you at church. Don't trust them. Keep them at arm's length. Don't trust them. Don't trust your leaders in church. They have evil intent. Now, daily, they're sitting around tables plotting and planning how they can make your life difficult. How they can make life hard for you. How they can mess you around. He's messing with our minds all the time. Circumstances, black hole, I'll never be able to get out of it. Bombarding, bombarding, bombarding. chipping away at your faith, chipping away at your confidence, chipping away at your resolve. Because he knows that when he gets your mind, he captures your life. He's like a little Pac-Man or Pac-Woman that just nibbles, 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 and nibbles, and nibbles until there's nothing left of you. We have to be careful, friends. We must be intentional about what we let in. So what should we let in? Take a look in Philippians chapter 4. What should be in our minds? What is it? What are the kind of thoughts that's going to bring health and healing to my hurts, my hang-ups, and my habits? In Philippians chapter 4, Paul gives us some great advice. And this is a life-changing passage. It's Philippians 4 verse 8. It says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. It gives us a number of options here about the kind of things that we should be thinking of. It says, whatever is true, think about that. What is true? What is true, scripture is that you are fearfully and wonderfully made. Big nose and all. That is what is true. What is true, the Bible says, that you're a one-of-a-kind masterpiece. What is true is that God doesn't just like you or love you. He is absolutely mad about you. He adores you. And I know our minds cannot even comprehend that. We can think it of others, but we cannot think it of ourselves. Yet the Bible says that is what is true. Your wife or your boyfriend or your girlfriend might love you, but God is your absolute number one fan. That is true. What is true is that God is almighty and powerful. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and he cares about you as the individual. He knows your name. You're not just a number. He knows you by name. He says, Cassius, I care about you. You matter to me. You are important to me. That is true. We need to fill our minds with those biblical truths to full capacity. It says, whatever is noble, in other words, whatever is upright or honorable or holy, think about such things. Think about something in the scriptures or in your life that you've seen as honorable and upright and holy. Think about such things. Whatever is right. The Greek word for right is dikaios. Meaning, he who gives to God and to man whatever he is due. So think about the things due to God. Think about the things due to man. How can I serve man? Think about things like that. How can I love my neighbor? Think about things like that. What is due to God? Worship is due to God. Think about things like that. Scriptures like Revelations 4 and 5 that talks about the elders and the angels all falling down and worship before God, singing, holy, holy, holy is he who is to come. Just fill our mind with those kind of thoughts. Think about whatever is pure. The word pure in Greek is hagnos. It was used to describe something that was, when it was ceremonially clean, it meant that it is cleansed in such a way that it could be brought into the presence of God. Things that are cleansed in such a way that it can be brought into the presence of God. What kind of thoughts has been cleansed in such a way that it can be brought into the presence of God? That's what I need to be in search of. That's what I need to store up in my mind. Whatever is lovely. Now, the best translation for that from the Greek to English would be, that which calls forth love. In other words, think thoughts that would call forth love. When I'm thinking something critical about you, Does it call forth love? When I'm judgmental towards you, does it call forth love? When I'm angry, does it call forth love? But when my mind is filled with thoughts of kindness and patience and grace and mercy and love and care, when I'm around you, what does it do to you? It calls forth love from you to me. Because you will know what I think without me telling you. You will pick it up in my body language. You'll pick it up in the way that I am. It oozes out of us. Therefore, he says, think of things that are lovely. Think of things. Fill your mind with things that will call forth love. Whatever is admirable, commendable, if anything is excellent, outstanding, brilliant, exceptional, or praiseworthy, think about such things. What do you think about most of the time? Worries? Anxieties? Money? Stress? Attitudes? Criticism? Anger? Whatever it is that you get into your mind, this is where the sponge comes in. Whatever it is that you get into your mind, here's a bucket of water. Whatever you allow to soak into your mind eventually comes out. So in other words, if you allow your mind to be soaked into anger and soaked into criticism, soaked into self-destructive thoughts, soaked into faithlessness, soaked into impurity, then what will come out in your life is that impurity, is that criticism. And it will affect every fiber of your being. And what's fascinating of what happens is that today it might be okay, but tomorrow is another day. And whatever happens tomorrow or the day thereafter is dependent on the kind of thoughts that we've stored up today. Because what happens is you dip your mind in this, and now the pressure of life comes on and on and on. And the more pressure there is, the more this thing is squashed, and what is inside of you is what comes out. Now, if you're struggling today with issues of forgiveness or issues of, with issues of anger or issues of criticism, that's why I took a gene. Only a man can do that. I'm sure that's what the women are thinking. But what comes out, what it is that you're experiencing and what it is that you are feeling, is what it is that you've stored up in your mind. Saturate your mind. Saturate it, friends. Saturate it with whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right. Go and make a list. Sit down today, take out a piece of paper. Go and make a list. What is true? What is noble? What is right? Let me ponder on these things. Let it saturate my mind, the things of God. And then in times of pressure, that's what will come out of me. What else will help us? Take a look in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. What do you do? Now, I need a volunteer for this one. Warren, thank you. Yelita pointed your way. Warren, if you can please sit on the chair there. What happens if a thought sneaks through? In other words, I've got this filter. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is excellent, whatever is praiseworthy, think of such things. What happens if a thought sneaks through that filter? He's hoping not for the hammer. Okay, can you just quickly stand? Just stand there. I'm going to handcuff him. Okay, hands behind your back. You guys hear that? It's all too familiar. I knew I had to take someone who is used to this. I didn't want to evoke hands across like that. Okay, we're going to need some help here. Just hold on a second there. Okay. Just bear with Warren here for a moment. Just in case. The police use these days. Okay. How does he look? Is he okay? He's not hurting. Is it hurting you?
No.
Okay. Okay, now let's just move that like that. Is it better? Is it better? Okay, you can sit again. We'll leave him there for a moment. Okay, I try, and it's going to be difficult to ignore him, but there he is. We'll get to him later. Okay, I need help here. I didn't type this out. Can I quickly have a Bible? Thank you. 2 Corinthians 5. Oh, sorry, 2 Corinthians 10. Thank you for that reminder. Verse 5. Paul says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought, and we make it obedient to Christ. What happens if a thought sneaks through? What happens if there is, I didn't mean for it to happen, but there is a lustful thought that comes into my mind, a thought of impurity? What happens when that comes in? The Bible says, Paul says, that what we do is anything that sets itself up against God, we demolish. We demolish every argument and every pretension that sets itself up against God. Demolish. Here's where we make the mistake. I think what we do is look away. Hey, I'm just afraid. Do you want to turn like that? I'm just afraid that he gets hurt in this. Okay. Here's what we do. I struggle with the thought of impurity, and I think, and it doesn't go away. And I wonder, why am I struggling spiritually? There's a thought of criticism. And I wonder why it is that I'm not feeling on top of my game. Why is it that I'm struggling like this? Why am I not feeling any better? Why do I feel like there is distance between God and myself? Why am I sitting here today burdened? I think some of us are sitting here today burdened because we don't demolish those kind of thoughts. Demolish means, oh, I hope I don't hurt them through this. Okay, let's look the other way. Yeah, okay. Try and put that back together. It is impossible. It says we demolish arguments that sets itself up against God. We demolish it. We totally destroy it. We allow ourselves, friends, to be destroyed by Satan because we allow the wrong kind of thinking in our minds and we don't destroy it. We say, well, let me just ponder upon it just for a couple of seconds. It says demolish. I know there are some of us here this morning that it's time to demolish, and you know it. You know that it's killing you. You know that it's ruining you spiritually. You know that it's hurting your marriage. You know that it's hurting relationships around you. Demolish it. Demolish it. The second bit of advice that he gives, and this is where Warren comes in. Can you see if you can get out of that? Okay. He's the hero because I didn't want to cut off his blood circulation. What we need to do is what I call rabbit hole thinking. Have you guys ever gone down rabbit hole thinking? Rabbit hole thinking, your mind sitting here. Rabbit hole thinking is when you start thinking something. you're sitting in the fellowship and you see someone look at you in a certain way. You think it is. They're thinking that. They actually didn't even look at you. They didn't even see you. They looked past you. But in your mind, you thought they looked at you. And so you think about it. I wonder why they looked at me. And you start thinking to yourself, but they didn't just look at me this once. I think last Sunday they looked at me too. And then you start thinking, but I wonder if I'm not mistaken, their nose lifted a bit. There was a bit of a something going there. And then you start thinking about what it was that you were thinking when you saw them looking at you, and maybe you were thinking something that you weren't supposed to be thinking. And now you're thinking, but maybe they knew what I was thinking. And now I'm thinking, but maybe they're critical. And I'm thinking, but maybe they're a critical person. And as a matter of fact, they've been critical on you before, haven't they? Or you've heard that someone said that they were critical. And you know that they're actually someone that really struggles with criticism. But not only is it criticism, but how could they even be critical? I know how much they read their Bible, and they barely read their Bible. And now they want to be critical about me, about what I thought, but he's not even reading his Bible. And I can see that his wife is not radiant. I can see it. And she's most probably not radiant because he's a bad husband, and my guess is that she doesn't read her Bible. And it's not like she's doing it because she's spending time with the children, because you can see the children are delinquents. And I hope to God that I don't get children like that one day. And I would do a better job. And what you do with your thought life, it's rabbit hole thinking, is it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And you just disappear into this bottomless pit. Because someone looked past you. And then eventually, after months of this obsession, you go to them to clear matters. And it's just nice to have you close to me. And you go to them and you talk to them and you blurt it all out. And they are confused. Because they don't know what you're talking about. Why did it happen? Rabbit hole thinking. Because you didn't take captive. No, we did a bad job with capturing Warren. But you didn't take it captive. And some of us, we're not pulling those cable ties tight enough around those kind of thoughts when we go down that hole. Because we don't tie it, it doesn't become obedient. It says, take them captive and make them obedient. It doesn't want to be obedient. Thoughts of criticism, of judgment, of self-pity, of pride, of selfishness. It doesn't want to be obedient. You need to take it captive. I tried to get this, but I couldn't last night. If I were to put on Warren a real set of metal handcuffs, there's no way he's going to get out. No way. The only way that he'll get out is if I allow him to get out. You are in control of your thoughts. No one else is. You are the only one that can take it captive. You're the only one that can set it free. You are the one that can choose. I want to challenge us, brothers, sisters, friends. Let us choose right. Let us be more intentional about what it is that we put in our mind. Go and write down whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, and think about such things. And the Bible guarantees us that it will then bring health to your hurts, your hands, and your habits. God bless. Let's close in the prayer.